He's the witty guitarist from Nashville that keeps the Gaither Homecoming Tour on their toes while seriously keeping track of Bill Gaither's every move, not only on stage, but in the radio studio as well. Kevin Williams is with us for the hour, starting right now.
Welcome to Daniel Britt and Friends, an hour of good music and fun conversations featuring gospel music's brightest new artists, as well as legendary tributes and memories from its past. Now, here is Daniel Britt.
So Kevin Williams is with us. Kevin, it's good to have you, bud.
Daniel, what an introduction. My goodness. I don't seriously keep up with his every move.
Well, that's true.
I don't seriously do very much, but thank you for that. Wow. I'm impressed with me. That
yes. Well, last time I think that we really sat down and unpacked your history.
1972. Yeah, it was Fort Worth, Texas, and it was snow.
It was at a Cordae convention. And, of course, we talked about the Wendy Bagwell days, and we talked about how that evolved into what now is, you traveling with the Gaither Tour and doing the, obviously you're a talented guitarist, but now, if we can be very honest, it wasn't a period when Mark Lowry got out of the way for a few years that you were allowed to shine.
He's never really totally out of the way. Let's clarify, man. I think I started going out with the vocal band at toward the end of '92, and they were doing Gaither Vocal Band and Gaither Trio dates, and the trio at the time was Michael English and Bill and Gloria. And so they were not doing a lot of dates, 30, 40 dates a year, and they were really nice dates and just great evenings with the vocal band and trio. But this was kind of before the video thing started taking off, and boy, when it took off, it was major. And then, of course, through the latter part of the 90s there, it was just huge, every night. Well, then Mark decided to pursue his solo career a little more intently. And that was probably around 2003 to 2001, maybe. I don't remember exactly when that was. And he was gone for about 7 years. So, during that time, I've always been quirky and odd and goofy and, if you want to call it funny, whatever. But so Bill would just banter back and forth with me a little bit, and that's kind of how that thing evolved. But then on the radio show, I've been doing the radio show with them for about 3 years, Homecoming Radio, and that's been a privilege. So there are other elements of that you get to see and experience that you don't get to in a nightly performance. So so people get to see how weird my brain really is, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Was your wife attracted to any part of that in the beginning, or was it all a facade?
My money. I told her I had a ranch in Texas and a lot of acreage, mostly wooded. And, she was very attracted to that. No, our first date was to a movie and then Walmart. So that's the long and short of it right there. And so you got to be attracted to that. Where else can you go?
That's right. Well, we're going to get into some of the wackiness that is Kevin Williams and Wacky Words, and we'll talk about what that is with a project, believe it or not. And they give out Grammys for spoken word. I just want you to know. So
I hadn't thought about that.
You could be in the running here. We'll get into that in just a bit. In the meantime, of course, you know him as a guitarist, and here's some Kevin Williams sounds now on Daniel Britt and Friends.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about some pretty wacky stuff coming up, but let's jump into a serious tone to start things off. First of all, are you a reader? Do you enjoy reading?
I do read, and I do enjoy reading. The funny thing is I don't read a lot of fiction, which my brain creates enough fiction and friction for me to deal with. I read motivational things, and, of course, in my 20s and 30s, I read a ton of self-improvement. I love motivating and leadership kind of reads. And then, of course, anything that has to do with scripture and some theology, viewpoints. I don't go real deep into everybody's going to take on theology, so I just accept that and move on. Yeah. But, that kind of thing. That's kind of weird in itself.
Well, what book have you read lately, or maybe not lately, but something that has stuck with you that you're still thinking back on, you're quoting a lot, or that you refer back to, like go back and flip through the pages to remember exactly how he or she said this or that?
A couple things I'm into right now. Marcus Ryan has got a book out called Restless Journey, which is a man book. We men get into those wild at heart kind of things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm 46 right now, and so I'm at a point in my life where significance is pretty much a daily word with me. What am I doing that's lasting? What am I doing that's gonna count for anything? And we know the answers to some of those questions. Obviously, family and your children mean so much, what you put into them. But what is my legacy? What am I going to leave behind? What's truly important and lasting there? So that's kind of what I'm into right now. I finished a book by Joe Gibbs, who is a very winning coach and also a big NASCAR guy. It was called Game Plan for Life. Finished that. And then went back and reread, in the process of rereading, Max Lucado's Grip of Grace, In the Grip of Grace. Which is just all about God's goodness. It's just sweet candy for the soul. And that's a couple of things I've been into lately that kind of light my fire in the mornings.
Kevin Williams. All right. And by the way, there's a book by Dennis Rainey that's out that sounds like it might be up that alley too that I'm reading. It's divided into the different stages of a man. And, you know, obviously living for meaning and significance is part of that. So that's cool.
I looked at that book. I saw that and haven't read that yet. Once I get a couple off my desk, I'll probably tackle that. But that's a big thing for a guy to consider carefully. We go through life doing our to-do list and getting it all done and taking care of the people that we have to. And we don't stop to ask questions about our life. I think we've got a lot of good answers, but we don't ask the right questions all the time. And so the main question for me now is, well, what's it going to matter? Is this going to last? Is this meaningful? I spent 2 hours getting an oil change at the dealership this morning. I could have gone to a fast lube place, been out of there in 20, 30 minutes.
Yep.
But I wanted to use the dealership because the dealership is a big deal, you know. Well, it's the same 16-year-old kid that changed my oil at Valvoline.
Yeah.
So
right.
Anyway, that's how could I have better spent that 2 hours? What could I be doing, you know? So those are the questions that I'm asking these days, which I think are pretty worthwhile.
Well, you mentioned your desk. Let's talk about your office or your home, your living room. If I were to walk in right now,
what would
my eye go towards that would be like, hey, Kevin, what's this all about? Where'd you get this? Or why is this hanging on your wall? It makes no sense.
Okay, you ask great questions. I must give it to you. You really do. That's a wonderful question. If I give you a video tour, I'm in my office right now, which is upstairs at the house. I had an office downtown Nashville for about 15 years and owned a recording studio. We had a couple studios in this one building there, and so sold that a few years ago and then moved my office back home, which I love. It's more creative, and I can get in there when I want to. However, it's a mess. It's horribly a mess. You ask about me being a reader. I'm looking at 30, 35 books stacked up around the floor and around my desk, and then I've got stuff in bookcases in the other room in here. But these are just things I've referenced and haven't put back yet.
Mm-hmm.
As you turn to the right, there are three guitars sitting on the floor here. One is one that I am fixing up for a dear friend of mine. The other one is one that has to go back out on the tour, and then one is a nylon string that I just bought. Here's a little Mando, what do they call this? This is a banjolin, I guess they call it, which has a banjo resonator head on it, but it's small like a mandolin and strung like that, that a dear friend of mine in California gave me that I'm kind of refinishing and putting back together. Here's a Fender amp with a Gaither video setting on it. How about that? Here's a card that I bought for my wife and then lost the card in my office and found the card over Christmas.
Oh, nice.
So that's here. Yeah, it's blank. It's not got anything in it yet. Let's see. Here is my new project. Let's see. Here's a little thing that says, if you have faith, nothing shall be impossible for you. Here's a label maker. And then in the stack of papers, here's a bank statement. And what else can I find here? Here's scratchy little things, notes that I've made, possible future book titles and jokes and that kind of thing. So that gives you some idea.
Wow. That was more than I bargained for.
Well, let me tell you this. I have a good friend, and she knows some of the things that I like. She saw us in concert a time or two, and so she sends me a little something that she bought off eBay every now and then just to say, hey, we appreciate your ministry and what you do. She sent me a big ticket item that she bought from the Andy Griffith Show. You know I'm a big fan of Andy Griffith,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned Brian Free a little while ago, and Brian is another big Andy authority. He and I could go into a trivia contest and probably last for hours.
Yeah.
She sent me Howard Sprague's telephone from the Andy Griffith Show.
Whoa.
There is an episode where Howard moves out on his own and goes into a, quote, bachelor pad. And has this real hip-looking furniture and all this stuff, beads hanging down. Well, so his telephone is a rotary dial phone that's red. That's the only thing about it. It's a red rotary phone. And years ago, the prop master sold off a bunch of the props from the TV show, and somebody bought it and put it on eBay about a year ago, and she bought it for me and sent it to me. And I have Howard Sprague's phone in my office.
Nice.
How obscure is that?
Well, I would think it would be a direct line to the president, you know, if I walked in.
Well,
so
it looks like the red phone. It really does. And I get a kick out of telling people because it's like, wow, that's really neat, but how obscure. And yet when I told Andy Andrews, he flipped out. He said, I've got China sitting in my China cabinet that belonged to King so-and-so. And he said, I'd rather have a Howard Sprague's phone, you know. So, yeah, that's, it's kind funny. Of a topic of conversation.
I bought something odd off eBay once. It was a, what do you call the rub boards, like the Zydeco bands play, kind of the washboard thing?
Yeah.
But it's one of these that actually has the shoulder where, you know, fits over the shoulder nice. It's a professional piece of metal, I guess. And it was actually performed by Regis Philbin in New Orleans. So,
how cool is that?
And it's autographed to a guy named Dennis. But I have it. So there you go.
That is too funny. Yeah. And you can wash your shirt on it later.
That's right. That's right. And now that he's retired, I expect big bucks out of it. So
that's wonderful.
Hey, Kevin Williams is with us. You're listening to Daniel Britt and Friends. Wacky Words is a project that is, wacky. It's out of left field for gospel music, but I like that. And what it is, it's a compilation of radio segments from Homecoming Radio broadcast that, boy, you guys have more co-hosts than a football team, I think. And it's a revolving door, but this year's you and Bill Gaither.
If Gaither is involved in it, there's going to be a lot of people coming through the revolving door. You know that.
That's right. It's a
We're
party.
We're going to get you on there sometime. Now, we got to get you in there for at least a show or two.
That'll be fun. Phil Brower, Larry Gatlin drops by sometimes. I think Joe Bonzall, Mark Lowry, Tori Taff.
You know, it's a wonderful ensemble. The show, not to talk too much about another show, but it's on about 2,100 stations now around the world, or outlets, I guess I would say. And it's online, too, and it's a lot of the homecoming music. It's an hour of just homecoming music and fun. Well, Bill's been doing that show for 7 or 8 years. He started with just he and Phil Brower. Phil produces the thing. And then brought Mark Lowry in pretty soon, and they had a great combo going, just Bill and Phil and Mark. Well, you know, schedules are always busy for everybody, and so Mark's off doing lots of things now. And about 3 years ago, I came into that, and then now Tori Taff, who is wonderful, she's our token chick on there, and she just is a great personality to have. She's on there all the time, and Phil and Bill and myself. And I have a radio background, and I've talked to you about that before, and I'm a broadcast fan. I love great broadcasters, and in our field, there have been a few great broadcasters, and I keep up with them and talk to them from time to time. And just I always know trivia on you and Paul Heil and all these guys that I admire too. You know, well, so that's a trip for me to get to do. And we tape them in blocks. 3 or 4 times a year, we get together and tape a block of episodes. And then lately, Joe Bonzo has been in the cast when he can drop by, we've even had, let's see, Larry Gatlin, of course, you mentioned, which if Larry's there, nobody gets to talk. Larry is on 10 the whole time. And then we had Gene McDonald drop in for some, and Jeff Easter and Karen Peck. And so, yeah, it's just been a lot of fun.
And there's a feature in every program that's called the Word of the Day, which is a kind of an obscure word that people don't really know or ever heard of. And it's an education lesson. I think it maybe is to meet the educational guidelines set forth by the FCC. Yes. I think that's probably why you do that. But it's,
we want to make sure we were in full compliance with any definitive rules.
Yeah. And so for educational purposes, for example, I found one. This is on a list of most beautiful English words, and it doesn't sound very English to me. But okay, it's pistache with a P, and so if Phil were giving you the word of the day, you have an opportunity to chime in and give your best guess, I guess, right?
Pistache, can you spell that for me? Because the phone connection here is a little crazy.
It's P-A-S-T-I-C-H-E.
Oh, pistache, of course. I know that word. Yeah, well, that's a cousin to the mayonnaise product that is put out in most of the grocery stores in the Southeast. A lot of folks know it, different brands, of course, grocery store name brands, and then JFG in the Southeast, they know Duke's. But Pistache was doing this way before anybody, and they weren't making mayonnaise out of eggs. It involved tuna fish, actually, itself, and it came in a can instead of a jar. It was a little impractical. It didn't really fly off the shelves. In fact, it sat on the shelves. And so they got rid of that in about, I think it was 67. No, it was probably 68, because Dick Van Dyke was on at the time, and they used to feature that in the show. Probably had something to do with the show going off the air. I don't know. But that's why you don't hear pistache anymore. Now you do hear pistachio ice cream, but of course that has to do with a nut.
Yeah, right.
And I know nothing about nuts, so there you go.
All right, pistache or pastiche? Okay, the correct answer, Kevin. It's not unlike homecoming radio. It's an artwork combining materials from various sources.
I cannot believe I missed that.
So there you go.
I missed that. Wow.
And
all right, we'll do it again, then. That's I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Daniel.
While Kevin is on a roll, this is an excerpt from Wacky Words, Kevin Williams, on Daniel, Britt, and Friend.
Guys, this is that moment the world's been waiting for. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
The word of the day. It is ruthemia. Ruthemia. Everybody knows that, I'm sure.
Use it every day.
You know, I actually do know that, Phil.
You do?
Oddly
somehow,
enough.
I thought you might.
I actually have that over here. You know, Ruthemia was a 12-year-old young girl who dreamed of having her own daytime TV show that would influence people in a very positive way. And her goal was to conquer daytime ratings and become a cultural icon. So now we know Ruthemia
as... Oh, Dr. Ruth.
No, Judge Judy.
Oh.
So, am I right on it?
Yeah.
I thought it was rheumatoid ruthemia.
Yeah.
My first girlfriend was named Ruth.
Mark, what does it mean?
Actually, it means cheerfulness, merry, optimistic, Tori Taff.
That's right.
Mary Themia.
Full of Ruthemia.
Well, it's time to turn the spotlight on the brilliance, guys. Uh-oh. The world is waiting, so here we go. The word of the week is impluvious. Impluvious.
You know, an interesting thing, Phil.
That sounds like a skin condition.
It does. You know, they don't make those anymore. They discontinued production of the impluvious in 1962. It was manufactured all through the 50s by Chrysler. I called my buddy Jeff Easter for a technical explanation because I don't know how to explain these things. He said the impluvious triaxle was connected to the Hoffenstadt thermocycle, which in turn fired the spark and, of course, ignited the whole strip of Chiefendangles that rolled the drive axle.
Exactly right.
Chiefendangles.
Yes. They don't make those anymore, don't they, Mark?
No. You got it right, Mark.
That is funny.
Impluvious. That's it, Kevy. It actually means what, Marcus?
Wet.
Mm. What? Oh, that's right.
You're kidding
all
me.
Wet.
Wet. Impluvious.
Okay.
Wet with wet. Rain.
I'm calling Easter right now.
A lot of people talk until you're certain they're impluvious. And on today's edition of The Word of the Day, our word administrator, Mr. Lowry.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Brower.
Yes.
The word today, Tori, Bill, Kevin, Phil, is an adjective. It's a nod crafty.
Nod crafty.
N-O-D.
Nod.
Dash. Crafty.
Can I give the definition here?
Please do.
Yeah.
You know, Nod Crafty was one of the illustrious alums, actually, but not of the vocal band. He was the lead singer of the Crafty Brothers and Connie.
Crafty Brothers and Connie.
Who were so popular in the Deep North. They were so popular in the Deep North back in the 60s. Mark, you may remember they had that trilogy of the tribute songs to coffee. They had the Java Jive and Just One More Cup and Had It Not Been. And of course, that was Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod Crafty. So,
that is good.
Am I right on that, guys? Am I right?
I think it is.
Is that right, Mark?
That's it. No, actually.
No.
Actually, it means great wisdom. Being able to nod with an air of great wisdom. Ooh. I do that all the time. I nod. I have no idea what they're talking about.
Nobody believes you.
Okay, folks, here we go.
All right.
That moment of brilliance, the time that will add a little luster to your years of lifelong learning. The word of the day. You ready?
Ready.
Drumble. The word is drumble. Kev, you were in it early.
No, that was me.
Oh, that was Mark.
Oh, you just always think he has it.
I'm sorry.
Well, when you swallow a drum and you have a little upset stomach.
You have a drumble.
You have a drumble.
A drumble.
What'd you think, Kevin? Is that it?
That's so wrong. You know, drumble, actually, gospel music term, is a filler word that's used by many quartet bass singers to connect the phrases when they don't know the lyrics, you know. I'll give you an example here. There's a happy rhythm, keep a drum, 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 drum. And that's it's been used for decades.
Yeah.
Near decades.
I believe that.
You've done that, haven't you?
I think Leroy Abernathy created that for bass singers.
In 1948.
He said there'll probably be times when you will forget the words. Mm-hmm. So you need to learn the drumming technique.
You know what it really is?
Go. Tell us.
Sluggish. Oh, Bill was drumble this morning when I picked him up.
Well, it's time for the low moment in the program. It's called the word of the day. And this is a real word. All of these are real words. And today it's called massaluent. Massaluent is...
I got it. Hang on. I got it.
You weren't going to do this without me, were you?
I got it.
Massaluent? Is that what I heard you say?
Well, you're right.
That is a name known to many, Phil. Narvel and Mary Jean Massaluent in the 1930s gave birth to three boys who later became experts in the world of unicycling, trapeze, and jumping on a trampoline while shooting a potato gun. Now, you know, they traveled exclusively in Europe under the name of the Magnificent Massaluent Brothers until their untimely demise when two of the brothers suffered extensive bruising from an untimely potato accident.
I'm wrong.
What is that?
Again, Mark,
it
help
should
us.
Be whatever he just said. It's lacking in substance, which is sort of like what he just
said. That is just what I said.
By the time you get into
the first two or three, you're wondering if it's going to be funny, and then you start laughing by about the fourth or fifth one. My concern was that it wouldn't be funny out of context, off the show.
Right, right.
And Bill, it was Bill's idea to do it, and he compiled it. Well, he called Phil, and they compiled it. And then he sent it to me, and he said, I've tested this on like five or six people, and this is funny so far, you know. And so he tested it on kids. He put everybody in his car and drove them around to listen to this thing. So I was just glad that he thought enough of it to do that. You know?
Nice. And it's available from your website?
Yeah, you can get it at kevinwilliamsmusic.com. Oh, thank you for the plug.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kevinwilliamsmusic.com. They also have it on the Gaither website, I think, too, now. There will probably be more of these down the road. It's not your average comedy album, but nothing average about me, I guess.
Kevin, finish the sentence. I'd rather have a root canal than do this.
Anything I know. Boy, that was too him related. I don't think you can give me that.
That's right. Funny stuff. No, is there something in life that you just really avoid?
Avoid, wow. Responsibility aside. I don't know. Confrontation, I'm not a big fan of confrontation, I don't ditch it either.
Yeah.
I don't know, other than just cleaning up my desk, you know, those kind of things that we all should learn by the third grade, I don't know anything that I totally avoid.
Right.
I went through a chunk of my life where I didn't want to face reality. This gets on a pretty heavy note here, but I avoided the reality of who I was and my situation. I'd gotten in a place in my life where I was, I think, pretty arrogant and prideful. And yes, a lot of my friends, they might disagree, but I, knowing me from the inside out, that's a true statement. And then after coming around that and hopefully to God maturing some, I can see how I didn't like reality, and I created a virtual reality inside my brain. So now I'm trying to use that for good. I'm trying to use this this creative mechanism that God has given me to make people laugh.
The Gaither Tour obviously plays to some pretty sizable arenas in big towns, big cities. So you might have to go back to your Wendy Bagwell days, or maybe even just thinking about truck stops, driving between venues currently en route. But where's the smallest town you've ever parked the bus?
Wow, the smallest.
where the bus was bigger than the town.
There are so many of those. I just don't know. And a lot of the names, I don't remember. I tell everybody I've played everywhere from the Sydney Opera House in Sydney, Australia, to Carnegie Hall, to the Kennedy Center, to the Rattlesnake Festival in Op, Alabama. And it's literally the truth, you know. I played in with a local group that I used to be with in Kentucky called the Sons, S-O-N-S. Mm-hmm. And I was a group of guys that I was playing guitar for when I was probably 18, 19 years old. And we went to a town in northern Kentucky that I don't remember the name of the town. It was on the way to Cincinnati. But we were playing and I won't say the name of it to embarrass anybody, but the fill-in-the-blank tabernacle. And I thought, man, that's going to be big. I never played an old tabernacle before, you know. And we got there, and the tabernacle seated 35 or 40.
Wow. Yeah.
And, it wasn't my thinking of what a tabernacle should be. But it's a holy place. So I kind of got my sights set a little too big there. So. I have set up and played at truck stops before. I've actually done truck stop concerts.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
A few KOA campgrounds?
Do it all. You know, when I was with Wendy, we did everything from gas station grand openings to... I remember one time we did a grocery trade show in, I want to say, Mobile, Alabama. And it was, and we were sponsored by Winn-Dixie. and went on and did a 40-minute set down there, and I was playing hot takeoff lead guitar for Wendy Bagwell. Well, Wendy, this is a Wendy story. We were in the middle of this train song, and he used to do a little dance step. And the stage was so small and rickety that when he started doing the dance step, all the equipment started shaking, the stage started shaking just from him moving. And he fell. And he fell over one of those stage monitors that you see that are the speakers that the singers hear from, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it kind of cut him about his ribs there. And I thought, oh, my gosh, he was in his 60s at the time. And he jumped right back up in the middle of that song, never missed a chord. And he said, if I was going to fall anywhere, I'd want it to be right here in Mobile, Alabama.
Wow. Did you learn your improv from him, you think, a lot of that?
A very big chunk of it comes from all the comedians that I've studied before, but I got to live with him on and off the stage for 5 years.
Yeah.
And so what I saw from him, he was a comedic genius. He was a genius at taking a routine and not only creating it, but then tweaking it and perfecting it every night, even down to the nuances, to where he took a breath, everything. He was very comfortable with saying the same words over and over again, but constantly trying to get to the point a little better, get the laugh a little bigger. And he never talked about that. I just saw him do that. The other lesson I learned from him was graciousness. He was so gracious to everyone. On and off stage, he was the same. There was no shaking your hand and then saying something else about you later. He was truly appreciative and gracious, and that's probably the bigger lesson I learned from him.
Kevin Williams, our guest today on Daniel Britt and Friends, and this project that's out called Wacky Words. It's selections from Homecoming Radio, a show with, well, we've talked about several hosts all together trying to guess the word of the day, and you're hearing it on Daniel Britt and Friends.
The word of the day, and if everybody's ready, here is the word. Quag swag. Quag swag is the word of the day.
I got quag squag.
Somehow
we knew.
Quag squag.
Quag swag. Well, that's what you said, right? Yeah.
Yeah, quag swag.
I'm surprised you guys didn't ring in on that. The quag swag was a great post-war pop song that swept the country, bringing joy to millions. You know, the quag swag was the predecessor to the hokey pokey. And Bill Gaither himself tried the quag swag just before the show today, put his left foot in and threw his back out. So am I right on that? You remember the... let's hear a little piece of the quag swag now. Can you play that in the booth?
No, Kev. What? Weren't close.
Oh. It's
people
it
often
close.
Quag swag to music being played. Yeah, that's right. It was.
It's not
what
bad.
Is it, Mark?
Well, to move back and forth, to sway to the music and not throw your hip out.
It's time once again for the word of the day. Are you all ready to go?
Goody.
This meaningless moment we do every week.
I'm sitting on go.
Okay, here we go. The word of the day is autoshediastic. Autoshediastic.
I do recall that, actually. The autoshediastic, well, of course, was a tasty pasta recipe that was available in a soda can that became quite popular in the U.S. It was developed by Ralph Boyardee in 1937. Now, of course, that recipe was later stolen by his brother Chef and changed the name to SpaghettiOs, and the rest is history, you know. Except for poor Ralph, who died penniless and unknown, still trying to suck a noodle through a straw. You know? Am I right on that?
You are really wrong. Really wrong. Autoshediastic. You've just heard a great example of something that is autoshediastic. Mark, what does it mean?
It means something done in the spur of the moment. Improvised. Just what you heard, Kevin. He's the king of it.
He's
the king of improvisation.
Guys, the whole world is waiting to hear your brilliance once again on the word of the day. So let's not keep them waiting. The word is kinch. Kinch.
Oh, I know this.
You do?
I actually know this, guys. A kinch is a vertebral subluxation resulting in a misaligned or herniated disc. For instance, I've got a kinch in my back.
Yeah.
You would say that, you know. So I got that right, didn't I?
Sorry, Kev.
Oh, wow.
really not a chance was that even close. Here's a sentence. Some people catch even when something's not funny, like we're doing right now.
Yeah. Vertebral subluxation. You didn't know I knew that, did you?
What?
Yeah. You can't even hear me over there, can you?
I can hear her.
No, you can't hear thunder.
No, I can hear her.
Gloria came in the room the other day and said, Bill, I'm proud of you. And he looked up and said, yeah, I'm tired of you, too.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Oh, we're having fun here. It's a big old party.
But it means to laugh loudly, right?
It means to laugh. Very good, William.
Kevin Williams here on Daniel, Britt, and Friends, and, of course, the Wacky Words Project. Very unique, but a lot of fun. And, Kevin, you told us a little bit earlier when we were getting the tour of your office that you have an instrument that you are getting ready to refinish. So along those lines, this may not be – we might be impressed, is what I'm trying to say, with this next question. What kind of power tools do you own? And give us an example of handyman type stuff you've done around the house that would impress us.
Well, I recently propped my kitchen sink up, if that makes any difference. You know, I used to do more of that than I do now. I don't have a lot of time. And, man, I used to be into Mr. Fix-It kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't simply because of time now, but I totally enjoy taking a guitar and sitting down and working on it. And the guys will tell you on the road, I have a guy that sets up my gear and tears it down. His name is Kirk, and he is fabulous with all the guitar stuff. But I string my own guitars. I want to sit there and string them and tweak them, and I want to intonate them myself and get that the way I want it. I'm just particular with that kind of stuff. So they laugh at how particular I am with certain things, and that I want a certain cable coiled counterclockwise as opposed to clockwise, you know, those kind
of right.
weird things. But, I enjoy, I don't know, there's something about just sitting down and rubbing some linseed oil into a fretboard and kind of making that come alive. And I don't know, something gratifying about that and hearing the difference in the tonality of a guitar once you've loosened the top up a little bit. I don't know a lot about that kind of stuff. I just know some little tricks I do that kind of help pull the tone out, you know.
Sure. Okay, Kevin, if three things are in front of you, which would be the least of your picks, I guess? An accounting spreadsheet, like a budget, a set of golf clubs, and a two-page-long grocery list to go to the store and retrieve those items. Which one would cause you the most fear or put a pit in your stomach if it were handed to you as a chore for the day?
You're going to laugh at the set of golf clubs. I deal with spreadsheets and budgets all the time, and a two-page list is a lot to go to the grocery store for. That would probably put a knot in my stomach, but I'd go.
Yeah.
I'd get the wrong stuff. I'd whatever. Golf clubs, you know, I've played golf before. I can't say I had a bad time with it. I wasn't interested in it.
Yeah.
There was nothing to hold my interest. I didn't get competitive with it. I didn't, there's nothing to make me want to go back. It was not unenjoyable. There's no interest. And I think you have to be interested in something to kind of hang with it. I have friends of mine that play all the time and invite me, and we live near two different golf courses. And I've never been to either one of them, but I have been to the grocery store and I have been to Quicken.
Right.
When it comes, can I ask you a question to ask me?
Yeah, sure.
Well, the thing you haven't asked is how did the word of the day thing come about? So would you like to ask me that?
Kevin, it's a brilliant question that I was going to ask you, and it just slipped my mind. How did the word of the day question come about?
I thought you'd never ask. You know, I started this radio show. I started being a part of the cast of the radio show, I should say, about 3 years ago on Homecoming Radio. And Bill and Mark Lowry and Phil Brower at the time had just a great thing going, and they did not need me. And I sat in and did a couple blocks of tapings and saying things here and there and commenting. And, of course, I know a lot of the artists were playing, and I could do some of the banter. But I didn't feel like I had a place necessarily. I didn't feel like I was contributing anything. Phil Brower had an idea where he would bring in a word of the day, and it would be a big word like substantialicious, echiopraxy, or Ligulian, or one of these words, you know. And then we would all sit around and go, I don't know what it is. I think it probably means, you know, a disease. And we would guess. And then Bill would have the answer in front of him. And Bill would say, no, guys, here's what it means. And that worked for a while. That was fun. And I just thought, well, you know, I got some ideas of what this could be. Why don't you give me an extra 45 seconds, and I'll tell you what it could be. And then usually I'm wrong. Now, there has been the off chance that I've gotten it right. But so I started just venturing into this weird brain of mine. And you know, there's a board game that you play that is like this. What's the name of the game?
Balderdash?
Yeah, Balderdash. Okay. Yeah, I couldn't think of what it was. In fact, you texted me about that a while back. I couldn't think of that.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing. It's just extemporaneous thinking. And
exactly.
So, you know, hopefully, it's obviously not believable, but it is funny. And hopefully. So
it's unbelievable, but you are so convincing. You know that?
Well, yeah, maybe that comes from a background of lying in my life. I don't know. I'll tell you an odd job I worked one time. Right about the time I got the job with Wendy Bagwell, so this is 25 years ago, I was working at a Radio Shack in Kentucky, and in a small town, and we didn't handle anything in the Radio Shack except a few adapters and some CB radios. And then anything else you could order, and we would have it Tuesday. And so that was the line I had to sell everybody on was, well, I know we don't have it in the store, but I can get it for you by Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I became a pretty good salesman with that. Oh, you know, let me tell you why we don't have it.
Yeah.
But you can have it by Tuesday. I can have it in your hands by Tuesday. Now, you want to do that, don't you?
Yeah.
And so that might be part of the convincing part. I don't know, but I have a lot of fun with it.
Hey, speaking of jobs, you ever watch that show, Dirtiest Jobs? I think Mike Rowe, and he goes to
Mike Rowe, yeah, big fan.
Okay, so if he were to come to your house or your office and want you to go back in time and point out the dirtiest job you ever had and for him to relive it or to go to get, what would it be? What was the dirtiest job you've ever gone through?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I've been so fortunate in jobs. I you know, there's no job I wouldn't go back and do again. I don't think there's a couple people I worked for that I wasn't crazy about, but you know, my first job at 16, part-time job in high school, was in radio. I started work for WJRS radio in Russell Springs, Kentucky, and they had an FM station with an AM simulcast, and I would go in after school and usually work 3 to 10. So I was working 7 hours a day and going to high school.
Yeah.
And just having the time of my life. And then eventually went with another station that was an adult contemporary format from a country format, and then got into news and that kind of thing. And so, you know, I really haven't had those horrible jobs that everybody talks about. I've had the horrible parts of my job that nobody wants to go back and do. I drove a bus the whole time I was with Wendy Bagwell. I had to be a part-time bus driver there, and drove pretty well, I think. I just, you know, I that's not something I would go back and do and take other people's lives in my hands like I did.
Right.
But things like that, you know, or getting up, people don't see the unglamorous side of getting on buses and airplanes at all hours of the night and trying to get somewhere and do a concert on 2 hours sleep and those kind of things. But I've never had the horrible jobs, thankfully.
This week I've been watching, don't ask why, but documentaries on having a whole food, raw vegetable diet, okay? And I never would have in a million years thought that would have even interested me. But so you're, what you say, 47? You're searching for meaning. Health-wise, diet-wise, have you changed since your childhood? Are you eating different stuff you never thought you'd eat?
Oh, I change all the time. Yeah, I'll be 47 this June. And, when I got in my 40s, I never worked out as a teenager. I never played football or did any of the things where you kind of get yourself into shape to do something. I carried a guitar and an amp, you know, so that was the only exercise I got. And by the time you're 40, that takes its toll. And so I really started revamping my lifestyle and losing some weight, getting in the gym and lifting a little bit, just trying to do some, you know, healthy things. Nowadays, I have a daughter who is almost a vegetarian, so she's more health conscious than the rest of us. But I still like chocolate some, and chocolate chip cookies are my favorite thing on, you know, favorite food, period. Yeah. But most of the time I eat fair portions and try to watch what I'm doing, get some exercise, just real no-nonsense stuff. I have granola and fiber stuff in the morning. Oh, I have old man cereal.
Yeah, right.
Those kind of things. So, yeah, nothing glamorous there.
Well, on the same lines there, what's the most unusual or even maybe disgusting sounding food concoction that you love but other people kind of turn their nose at?
Oh, that I love.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever had those little Vienna sausages that come in a can?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that in itself is a pretty disgusting proposition right there. And because that's got everything from pork shoulder down to the toenails in it, I think.
That's right.
But I will, on occasion, eat those with peanut butter on them.
Yeah,
it's okay. Weird, I know.
Wow,
that's,
okay.
I know. I hate to admit that on international radio here, but there you go.
Well, if it's anything like the new craze at fair, the Krispy Kreme donut hamburger, which I turned my nose up until I tried it,
and now
I'm a fan. I can't believe I love it, but it's good.
Are you serious?
It's good stuff. Okay, so Kevin Williams, by the way, Wacky Words, as I refer to it, a spoken word project, because it is. It's a really lot of fun. You want to have it in your collection just because you don't have anything else like it. I mean, honest. And the acoustic guitar project that came out, last year? You want to tell us about that?
Acoustic Sunday came out on Spring Hill, and it was an idea to do acoustic guitar hymns. But it's not just solo guitar. There are probably four of the tunes that are solo guitar, and the rest have a little bit of accompaniment. It's light bass and brushes, and Buddy Green played some harmonica on there with me.
Nice.
Jeff Taylor played his accordion and played a little pump organ thing on there, and Aubrey Haney is playing fiddle. So there's some really cool, the best way to describe it, it's a Starbucks sounding thing. It sounds like four guys got their acoustic instruments out and just did an unplugged little thing at Starbucks. But it's all delicate arrangements of traditional gospel hymns. Nothing But the Blood, Blessed Assurance, Leaning on the Everlasting Arms, At Calvary, Softly and Tenderly, all that stuff is on there. And it was a thrill to get to do. And it got nominated for a Dove Award and made it to the finals. And Sandy Patty won the Dove. And Sandy needed another Dove.
Yeah, true.
And Sandy, I love you, and you know I love you, and you deserve every award you get, except that one, probably. That one probably should have gone my way. Bring it over next time you come to the house. Just slip it in the car and bring it. But I love her. She deserved to win that. But yeah, that was a cool thing to get nominated for that.
And you have a Christmas project coming up for the next Christmas season that's approaching, right?
Yeah, we already recorded it and then made it available to the newsletter list, which, by the way, you can go to kevinwilliamsmusic.com and just sign up for a little email newsletter we do there from time to time. And your address is protected, your email address. We don't sell them or anything, but just a way to stay in touch. And then we made it available first to the newsletter list this year, so they got a year jump. And then we'll try to release it in the fall for Christmas of this coming year. But yeah, I get to do 12 traditional favorites. I did everything from Joy to the World to Silent Night, Oh Holy Night. I did I'll Be Home for Christmas, White Christmas, and I did it all on a classical guitar, a nylon string, with piano and orchestra and that kind of thing, and it's really beautiful. I'm so thrilled with it.
Thank you.
Britt and Friends, our guest today. And, okay, here's a question. I know you've got girls, and they're growing up fast, but when out in public with your kids, and maybe to a stranger they say or ask something a little unusual, maybe they're a little too honest, you know, kids can be that way, do you try and help explain your children or explain their questioning or what their statement was, or do you steer that question in a more socially acceptable way?
Probably a little bit of all of that. I laugh mostly is what I do, because they are the best comedians I know. They just crack me up with their senses of humor. And if it's inappropriate in some way or hurtful or something, I'll try to, you know, just make that where it's not embarrassing for them. I don't want to, you know, cause them shame or embarrassment for something they didn't know they were doing
wrong. Sure, right.
But at the same time, just try to make that work for everybody involved. For instance, we were in Destin, Florida one night in a Walmart. We go to Walmarts all over the world. And I've been to some great Walmarts in Romania and Shanghai, but this one was in Destin, Florida. And there was a little person walking in there. Uh-huh. And the term we used to use years ago, we would say midget. But uh-huh. Now that's not as politically correct, and little people is what we say, and certainly you know, nothing derogatory there. I think that's just a term that's acceptable now.
Right.
Well, my youngest Olivia was in the checkout line, and she looked over and saw a little person who was probably about 50, uh-huh. And she turns to her sister, and Olivia was, I guess she was 5 or 6 at the time, 5-ish probably, and Carolina was about 7. And Olivia is like me. She can't whisper. Everything's loud. And she says, "Look, sissy, a real live midget."
Oh,
and it was just—it was like it echoed everywhere, you know. Well, I just died laughing. I'm sorry. That is a funny thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, made sure that no feelings were hurt, and went over and introduced myself and all, and everything was fine, you know. But yeah, those things happen. That's part of the magic and the laughter of life, Daniel, and it's everywhere.
Yeah,
you got to look for it sometimes, but laughter's everywhere, and just enjoy that, you know.
And guys, we welcome today the National Brilliance Committee as they meet in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Oh, they're in Hoboken today.
Yeah, they're reviewing our definition on the word of the day. Yeah.
Okay.
So here we go. Here's the word. Polydipsia. Polydipsia.
It's a dip made out of parrots.
Yeah.
Poly.
Yeah. Actually, Phil, I have that over here if you'd like to know.
He's got it.
Polydipsia was a wonderful lady who... in 1924, invented a dance that rivaled the Charleston. The Polydipsy Doodle became incredibly popular until she became Polydipsy Pokey in 1928 when she married Edgar Hokey Pokey. And the Polydipsy Doodle fell into obscurity there. So is that right?
No, it's not. It's the wrong spelling. They've misspelled it. It's polygripsia, which means when the polygrip does not work.
Bill? There you go. Yeah. Just grab
what
your
uppers. What does it really mean, Larry? What does it really mean? It's on the sheet.
Extremely thirsty.
That's right.
I thought we'd never get to that.
Well, Kevin Williams, Wacky Words Come to Life, and you've got it on a CD project that's available at kevinwilliamsmusic.com, and also the Acoustic Sundays. We've been hearing outstanding. I love that term that you put there, the Starbucks band of guys just sitting around having a cup of coffee. And if I know Buddy Green, that seems true to life. So there you
go. You know, Buddy is a dear buddy of mine, and we do share a cup of coffee and a cup of theology every now and then when we get to. And he's a fabulous musician, but he has a lot of great spirit in him, and he brought a lot to this project too. So it features me, but there's a lot of other pretty things on there that you get to hear besides just a guitar, you know. And I would love to tour that sometime, and we could tour the finer Starbucks in North America. But to take Buddy and Jeff and Aubrey and some of those guys, if there were a way, Greg Ritchie, my dear friend for life, played. He didn't play a full drum kit on here. He played just a snare drum. So there's just brushes on a snare to make it sound a little more intimate instead of the big
sure
thing. And that would just be fun to me to sit around and play hymns and try to bring Christ to just a bunch of coffee drinkers like myself, you know.
Kevin,
that's one of those crazy ideas in my head anyway, Daniel.
It's brilliant, but it's fun, and it's all wrapped up in this one guy we know, Kevin Williams. Hey, Kevin, you're great to join us, and thanks for taking your time, bud.
I have enjoyed it. You truly ask great questions, and I've admired you and your career for years. I remember you before the Jesus Christ hair.
Yeah,
and
right.
Man, you got it going on, and we just all think you're great. You are a legend. In training, I guess. You're going to go down in history, I think, as one of the great broadcasters in our genre of music. Thank you for all that you do.
Hey, you're very, very kind. I appreciate it, Kevin.
Buddy, thank you, and talk to you next time. I hope it's soon.
You've been listening to Daniel Britton Friends. Each week, Daniel brings you exciting music, conversation, and news updates from the world of Southern gospel. You can hear many of the interviews, again, online at danielbritt.com. Make a date next week for Daniel Britton Friends.